I think for me, the big sort of thing about the budget is that forecast of often the never never of 2024, of basically moving to a real sort of flat tax scheme of things. It looks like a tax cut, but really what is it? It's a massive cut of revenue and a changing of the way in which our tax system is used to redistribute money and reduce inequality. And the one thing that is not in there is any sense of how is this going to be funded.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to this very special Scratch It, Make It Up edition of Australian Politics Live, the podcast. I'm Catherine Murphy, political editor of Guardian Australia, and I am the host of this show. Now, as we promised you last week, this is Budget Night, and I have reconvened our special economic session to give you, download our first thoughts and impressions. And I'm delighted to say that my boss and fellow podder, Lenore Taylor,
back for one night only,
is with me in the studio for the first time since our 3 a.m. podcast after the last federal election. Anyway, this could go anywhere, but it's going to go in a very productive direction. Joining Lenore and myself in the studio are, of course, Greg Jericho.
Hello.
Man of graphs and deep thoughts, and our wonderful neighbour and friend Shane Wright, the economics editor of the West Australian newspaper.
And popular culture aficionado.
Yes, and Kate Bush Wrangler. Yes. Anyway, let's get into it, folks. So we'll start with first impressions of the budget. Shane, why don't you kick off?
Well, the first impression is reasonable. It's a pre-election budget. There's a lot of money has come in. There's a lot of money shovelling it out. And the giveaway is there's so few savings that this is a pre-election budget. No one, except if you're a foreigner or you've got too much cash in your pocket or you're an ABC watcher, really are going to feel a bit of pain.
Lenore?
Yeah, I think Shane's right. There's no need to overthink this one. This is a re-election budget. People under $90,000 are the ones who've been hurting through the absence of wage increases. They're the ones that get a tax cut. Everyone else has to wait until they've re-elected the Turnbull government two times before they...
Or maybe even three.
Or maybe even three before they get their tax cut. So that's kind of a fair way off, shall we say. And there are other things that have that smell like election in this budget. There's a lot of funding towards rural Australia, rural health measures, rural education, money for the parents of rural students. There's the aged care package and superannuation package. So all in all, it's an election budget.
Mm-hmm. Greg?
Scott Morrison is finding that it's much more fun and easy to be a treasurer when the Treasury gets the figures wrong on the downside and revenue is a lot better than was expected.
You can say surprise.
Yes. Wayne Swan and even poor Joe Hockey would be looking at the numbers that Scott Morrison is getting, and they'd probably be shedding a few tears of regret that it never happened to them, because he certainly got a lot of money to play with and more money than he even expected just 5 months ago.
I want to bring that up because it is interesting. We've talked about revenue awash and rivers of gold. They are still running a deficit this financial year, and they would have run a deficit next in 2019-20 if not for the discovery of all this illicit tobacco trade, which in 2019 there
magically,
it is 3.2 billion, and the surplus for that year is supposed to be 2.2 billion. This is a budget surplus built on dodgy ciggies. Courageous position to
it's
take.
It's also built on some fairly courageous assumptions about what's going to happen to wages in the out years as well, I think.
They're still keeping with the belief that in a couple of years' time we'll be back to 3.5% wages growth.
Which would be terrific.
Which would be great. And
Lenore, would you like to offer Murph a pay rise right now?
I'd be into
while
that.
You're here.
He was talking about in several years' time.
Let's get moving.
I mean, Their figures last year on wages were heroic and found to be wanting, and they lucked out because their predictions for employment growth were lower than turned out, and pretty much they need the same thing to occur again, plus the chop shop money to come in. They're not going to have a $15 billion bonanza of company tax revenue. Extra company tax revenue like they got this year coming along again. That's a real sort of once in a couple decade type of bonanza. So there is a lot of there is a fair bit of room for error in this, but it's an error that will occur after an election.
Conveniently.
Well, the tax cut for all these people comes after the election. It's a rebate that applies from July 1 next year. The people who actually get a tax cut in time for the election are all those people earning over 87K, and it works out at $2.60 a week. So, I don't think I'll be paying much car rego off with that.
Don't make off with it. What about standout things, Shane? You've kind of semi-nominated, I think, the designated magician of Budget 2018, which is the black economy. Who knew that the black economy was actually a revenue printing machine or money printing machine? Is that something that stuck out, just something that's not obvious?
Well, something that we've actually been discussing at the West Australian office has been this saving of about 415 mil on reducing the visas for overseas doctors.
I spent half the budget lockup trying to figure that out.
And it's a saving because these people won't be issuing scripts and they won't be treating people. So you're trying to work out where the saving comes from.
Would you like me to tell you what the third official I went to about this?
We've had two of them.
So apparently because we're going to have 200 fewer overseas doctors coming in each year, and they would have been paid more than the newly trained junior Australian trained doctors that will be taking their place. This is a saving. There's also a reduction in the Medicare benefit schedule payment to overseas doctors so that they will get 80% of the MBS instead of 100%. So there's sort of two ways they're doing it. Some of that money goes back into these new rural health centres in the Murray-Darling, whatever. But the overseas doctors' measures, I think, bears further scrutiny when we get out of here.
It's as dodgy as all get out. Really.
Absolutely. We should just mention for the listeners who have not, unlike us, been entombed in the lockup for the last 6 hours, that this measure that we're discussing at the moment is the government's biggest expenditure saving.
Yeah. $415 million. Yeah.
It's worth a lot of money.
And nobody seemed to really know.
Understand what it was about. Yes. So anyway, okay, so is that your standout, Lenore? Was it?
No, I think the superannuation changes are a standout and in a good way. I think there's a bunch of different measures here which will help people keep track of their super, not pay unnecessary insurance or fees on their super. And I think that's an absolutely good piece of policy.
I would also add the change around the use of cash, the 10,000, you won't be able to buy a jet ski with 15,000 in cash.
Yeah.
And I have been informed.
Who buys a jet ski with $15,000 in cash?
I am informed that there was a pushback from West Australians involved in this saying, well, we've got a lot of FIFO workers who come down to Perth every Thursday, Friday, and they walk
buy jet skis.
And buy things with a lot of cash. Now, the whole issue, and Greg will understand this quite.
That sort of proves the point,
doesn't it? It does. There's a whole issue around the use of cash for money laundering and criminal organisations, and we've seen with the CBA who are in trouble for their ATMs being able to funnel more than $10,000 out. You can see where Kelly O'Dwyer was going. One, it is a good decision in terms of that's what you're trying to do is stop dodgy practices, but the fact that there was a pushback against it tells you something else.
Mm. Well, I think we did nail it in the end, but let's just clearly say what the measure was, Shane.
That from July 1 next year, you will not be able to buy from a business anything with more than $10,000 in cash. You will have to use an electronic transfer or checks, which given the banks will love this because checks have almost died and they make a motzer off them. Here's a chance to get the checks back.
Checks are making a comeback.
Checks are back in the mail.
Thank you, my dear. Now, Greg?
I think that, well, the standard, I agree with that. I think the superannuation changes are good. And they're one of those things which it's not, ironically, about a budget. It's not about big savings or revenue increases. It's actually about things that will make life easier and better for people. I think for me, the big sort of thing about the budget is that forecast off in the never-never of 2024, which of basically moving to a real sort of flat tax scheme of things. It reminds me a little bit of Joe Hockey's 2014 sort of plan for cutting education and health, which wasn't in the budget but was in the budget paper saying this is what we're going to do. And because a big figure was attached to it, everyone was like, well, what's that going, you know, it was about cutting services. This, it's about, it looks like a tax cut, but really what it is, it's a massive cut of revenue and a changing of the way in which our tax system is used to redistribute money and reduce inequality. And the one thing that is not in there is any sense of how is this going to be funded, what is going to have to be cut, or is it going to have to be a shift towards, you know, indirect tax or, you know, GST increases to keep that wonderful budget surplus, because it is a massive change in our tax system if it ever gets there. But it's so far off that the costings for it wouldn't have to be in a budget until the May 2021 budget. So we're talking possibly even two elections away if, you know, we have an early election this year. So it's not something that I think is going to certainly nothing that they have to, people going to be thinking about right at this moment, but I think it's an area where you really do get a bit of an insight into their deep desires. And I think
the government's.
Mm-hmm. And I think there is room there. The ALP could attack them on that in the sense of, okay, one, we don't believe it's ever going to happen because you're not even going to budget for it at this point, but also how are you going to pay for it? You know, you can't just say, oh, economic growth will pay for it all, like they're saying with the NDIS. This is a big change, and it's going to cost a lot of money, and that money has to come from somewhere.
Mm. And just before we get into will this save the government's bacon, which is sort of the key question from the mind of the government, what do you think about that flattening, Shane, that getting rid of the 37% bracket?
It reminded me of Joe Bjelke-Petersen's flat tax plan in his failed Joe for Canberra program. Reminds me of some of the activity that's going on in the Eastern European nations where some of the right wingers are really going towards flat taxes, because it is extraordinary. For your listeners, this is talk of having a single 32.5% rate for everyone earning between $41,000 and $200,000 a year. That is an absolute flattening of the tax rate in that space. And there is, as Greg said, issues around someone earning 50K a year, paying 32.5 versus someone earning 190,000 paying the same tax rate.
And for people like us sort of deep in the political process, it's easy to say, oh, well, that'll never happen. It's two elections away. It's probably more of a signal to the coalition's base and the commentators who have been, you know, the conservative commentators who've been arguing that the rich people are, you know, bearing such an unbearable and terrible taxation burden. But at the same time, I think Greg's right, because it sends a signal of intent. And like that $80 billion cut from health and education, which was also out in the Never Never, that signal of intent is also a potent thing in the electorate, even if in a practical sense it's not going to happen for a very long time, if ever. And the idea that someone on a very low income and someone on $200,000 has the same marginal tax rate, you know, I think a lot of people will have pause for thought about that.
And this may be form part of their legislation this week.
They're going to put the whole thing.
Got a signal that they may try and legislate like they've been trying to do with the company tax rate. Remember, that's supposed to be 10 years, but they've had to shave it back. You may try
but
and
Scott
see
Morrison said in the press conference he was going to put the whole thing in one legislative package
this week.
So we might end up in a situation where Labor says, yeah, I'll take the low-income stuff and see at the election for the rest.
Well, and they've already said that tonight, that they support them lifting the 87 to 90 threshold for the 32.5. But I think Wednesday or Thursday you might see a big piece of ledge in that space.
Interesting. Yeah, so let's keep this quick. Let's keep it to yes, no, or maybe. Will Budget 2018 do what the government intends it to do, and that's save its political bacon, Shane?
Maybe, and it depends on Thursday night with what Bill Shorten says.
Mm-hmm. Lionel?
Yeah, maybe. It's a maybe. Mm-hmm. It certainly makes it easier for them than before tonight.
Why does it make it easier for them?
Because they've got something to say to the argument that people on the lowest incomes are being squeezed. And, you know, that's a good thing mm-hmm. from their point of view.
Mm-hmm. Greg?
Probably not. Budgets tend to hurt more than they help governments, as we saw with Joe Hockey's budget, and as we didn't see, you know, say in 2007, where the Howard government was hoping that the big giveaway budget would boost things up. It didn't, and they generally don't do a lot of. But I agree with Shane. If Bill Shorten is able to frame this budget and his response in the way that he wants it to be framed, such as he did in 2014, it certainly won't help them, and will be where we have been for the last 2 years.
Well, you'll see if we're all right. Anyway, thank you so much to my guests. You've been absolutely delightful. Thank you to all of you for listening. Thank you to Miles Martignoni, the producer extraordinaire of this podcast. Don't forget, if you like the listening, you can subscribe through your favourite podcast app or via iTunes. Leave us a rating or a review if you're so inclined, and if you're not rude. Until we're back in the studio once again, either later this week or next, enjoy the budget. Go well.